Hello and welcome to another Chili Chump podcast. It's podcast number 8, I believe, and it's only been about a week, well, actually 4 days since we released the last podcast, because today is Monday. What's the date today? Monday the 4th of March. We released our last podcast. That was the one we did with Mike Jack.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, yeah. He's an interesting character. And what do you think today? We're doing the podcast in the new studio. Finally, it is completed. I mean, when we say finally, it's been 2 months completed, but...
So you've been slacking.
Yeah, you could say that.
This could be confession.
Confession. Yeah, the Chili Chump confessional. So today we're going to try and do the podcast in here and see how it goes. So we're going to be going through some questions today, are we not?
Yeah, I'm always astounded by the amount of questions that we get during a live stream, which happened yesterday.
Yeah, in case people don't know about it, we do a live stream the first Sunday of every month. Yesterday was the last one, it was the 3rd of March. And yeah, we had a lot of fun doing it.
It's
always a bit nerve-wracking before. It's weird, the live stream, it's... I enjoy doing it. Once I get going, then it's fine. But the build up to it, I don't know. Well, you get to see the other side of it.
Well, you almost missed the start yesterday as well.
I got distracted and then I saw the countdown hit zero. I was like, whoops, better get on there. Yeah.
But no technical issues, which is, you know.
No, if that was the extent of the technical issues, I think I'll be quite pleased.
Absolutely. But we get so many questions. And of course, you've only got so long to actually answer questions during the live stream. So you made a pact with your viewers yesterday.
Yeah, well, we've made a promise that we'll get to some of the questions. We can't get through all of them. I mean, it's impossible. We get tons and tons of questions, but we'll get through quite a few of them today. And we'll talk about a little bit of what we've been doing, or what I've been doing, I think, more so with the starting of the chili seeds. And today, spent the day potting up the plants, which was actually quite a bit of fun because the weather actually played ball today. We had the sunshine.
Nice, yeah.
It was beautiful while the sun was out. Every time the sun disappeared, I started freezing, so I ended up having to get a jacket. I was out there in a t-shirt, but then, yeah, it got a bit cold. So, yeah, well, let's jump straight into some questions and then we can talk about some other things as well.
Well, I mean, the fact that you've been out there potting up today, it's quite apt that we're focusing on growing and cultivation questions that came in. So we've tried to capture questions under themes. So there will be other podcasts that we do.
Yeah, I think
some of the other questions.
But. Yeah, well, we try and get more podcasts out more frequently if you're happy to help me out with them. And also Steve, when he's able to come around, he's so busy these days. But yeah, we'll try and get these podcasts out more frequently because try and make it so that we can edit them quicker. That's the setup here is a little bit simpler. We haven't got multiple cameras this time.
We'll
see how this goes. Hopefully this is a lot quicker. And please apologize in advance here. Barney is barking away in the background. So hopefully it's not too annoying. He will calm down, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
So let's get into some questions.
Okay. So I'm going to kick off with the first one from Emma Cronin.
Of course.
It's actually not from her, and I love this. So it's actually from her daughter, Carmea. And Carmea is taking part in your Big and Tall.
Yeah, I've seen some photos. Yeah, have you seen them on Discord?
Yeah, which is
she's
great.
Doing well.
So she's getting her involved in the growing very early on. And Carmea,
I don't think Emma has much choice in the matter.
No, she doesn't. And I'm sure Carmea will love the fact that you're answering her question. But she says, how many chili plants do you grow every year?
Oh, too many. We're potting up today. I realize I underestimate every single year just how long these things take. Today I just did 120 plants, so I'm nowhere near even halfway through. I think this year is going to be my biggest year. I think I said the same thing last year. That was my biggest year, and I keep increasing the number of plants I grow each year because there's just so many beautiful varieties and I just love doing it, and we keep on increasing the space we have to do it. But how many plants last year? I think I did about 400 plants in total. Might have been a few more. I mean, I ended up doing a few more experiments. This year, at least 800 looks like.
What? You were supposed to be thinning them out in the greenhouses.
Yeah, I'm not going to be growing all, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be growing all 800 here on the plot. Actually, I received an email today. I haven't read it properly. I just saw the first few lines. There's a, I don't even know if it's a festival or something. It's some sort of, it's a gardening show type thing. And I haven't told you about this yet.
Nope. Surprise!
So, yeah, they. I'll have a read of it properly a little bit later and respond. But it sounds like they want me to come and sell my sources and plants and stuff like that there. So that's where maybe some of the extra plants can go. Because I think the same thing happened last year. I ended up having, it must be about 70 or 80 plants that I just kept in a small pot for a while. I don't know why I just kept them, but I did. I kept them until probably June, July. I had a few of my patrons come around and pick up a few, and there were a few people in the local area that bought some. Yeah. So, yeah, I can't throw them away. And I always, the thing is, I always start more than I need because, you know, there's always the chance that, well, there's two reasons. Number one is, I might have problems with germination. Maybe there's a problem. Maybe I drop a tray or something like that, and I can't afford to.
You're very clumsy, so you know that's a real risk.
Thanks, but I can't afford, in my mind, to lose certain special plants, special varieties. Then the other reason was probably more important, especially when you're doing crossing and things like that, is if you let's say I want 10 CC periperis. That's what I want to end up with. I will, every year I do this, I'll plant 40, 50 of them.
I know, I've seen.
And then I'll select the 10 strongest starting.
Yeah.
And the reason that's a good thing is because those plants every year, if I'm doing that every single year, you're selectively breeding effectively. Mm. I could be doing it in a bigger range if I wanted to. I could do far more. But this way I get the strongest plants, the strongest germination, the seeds for every year just improve and improve. I saw a post a little bit earlier on Discord, and there will be a link in the show notes and in the description of that for the public Discord. But I saw one of my patrons mention that one of his CC periperi came up in 3 days.
Wow.
Now I average 4 to 5 days. Five is good. Right. But 3, that is impressive. So, yeah, I mean, that's just testament to it. There's no way my CC periperi in the beginning, when I first started isolating, it was anywhere near that sort of virility and healthiness. So there's a reason to grow multiple. So what's the next question? Hopefully that answered it. How do you pronounce the name? Because I think I get it wrong every time.
Emma Cronin.
No, I know Emma, her daughter.
Kamea.
Kamea. So Kamea, I hope that answered your question, even though it was a long-winded answer, as always.
We're going to be here a long time, aren't we? Poor Barney's already been in. He's desperate.
Barney keeps running in, yeah, checking what we're doing.
And then huffing and going off.
You're meant to be playing with me now.
So you're really going to test me with some of these names. I apologize in advance if I...
Hey, well, at least it's not only me that's mispronouncing things this time.
Names. Okay, so we've got a question from Mateus Bednarski. I'm hoping I got that right. Would you recommend letting leaves droop a bit so it's clear that you would, or so that it's clearly you would be able to tell when it needs water? What are those signs that you would look for to say that you need to water your seedlings?
Well, so I actually put a video out. You've been going through my videos because you're helping me out with articles and stuff. So I don't know if you've got to this one yet. But so I've got a couple of videos. One is about the right way to water. And I talk about this exact topic in that. So the right way to water is part of my beginner's guide to growing chilies. There's another video which is like, I think something like top 3 tips for growing chilies, or top 3 tips for seedlings, something like that. So direct answer to that question is yes. You want to allow your seedlings to droop. Now, you don't want to do that constantly. You don't want that to be the way that you now water your plants until the end of the season. You want to do that only in the beginning to figure out, get an estimate of how much water do they need, how often do I need to water. So you get an idea of your climate, your growing space, and you water it, you let it start to droop. As soon as it starts to droop, then you know I need to go and flood it now, get some water back into it. And you do that once or twice and you'll get to get the rhythm of it. You'll realize, wait, every 3 days is happening. Therefore, before it droops next time, then you hit it. Because the plant doesn't want to be stressed all the time, because when you stress it too much, you're going to stunt its growth. It's going to not stunt its growth. It'll slow it down a little bit. So it'll be like maybe 10, 20% slower in growing than it would be if you've kept it watered just as it needs it. But the key thing here is, you'd rather underwater than overwater a chili plant. If you overwater, that'll definitely stunt its growth. And you end up also getting some other problems like edema with little bumps on the leaves and things like that, and other illnesses. It's not as healthy. It's not able to fight off any of the infections that might come in and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's a good question, but yeah, go have a look at those videos. I don't think I'll be able to link them down below, but go have a look at my beginner's guide to growing chilies. There's the right way to water. And I am doing a reboot of that episode, because I have been rebooting my beginner's guide to chilies, or beginner's guide to growing chilies. And that's one of the episodes I am rebooting. And there's a few others as well, like my soil mix, nutrients, things like that.
So would you take that approach until you pot up?
No, just at each stage. At each stage. So in the seedling stage, once I potted up to, like today I potted up to 0.5 liter pots. Mm. And I would then, I'm going to let them, I've soaked them completely once I've potted up. They are now sitting in their trays. They've got the lights on them and all that's going on. I'm going to leave them alone now. I've made note of when I had potted them up. And I'm going to keep an eye. And when I start seeing the majority of them start to droop their leaves, or the leaves become a bit flimsy, then I know it's time now to flood them again. And that gives me indication. I only do it once because I know my growing system, so I know what I need. But as soon as I then pot up that 0.5 liter up to, let's say, a 5 liter or even a 1 liter, whatever I'm going to pot up to, then I'll do it again. Because at that point, I might be taking them out to the greenhouse. I might have more warmth inside the germination shed. So you need to also figure out, again, how much water do they need? Because if they're sitting there stuck with water the whole time, it's really going to ruin the plant.
I've got a follow-on question. So you mentioned there that you document when you pot up and when you're doing all of that. So for new people to the channel, you're doing all of that in Seedzio, yeah?
Seedzio, yeah. So Seedzio is an application that I built that I spend tons of time on. So I'm a geek at heart, and that's probably one of my favorite things to do is code Seedzio. But the problem is I can get so lost in that I could probably spend days doing it. But Seedzio is an application that helps you monitor your plants, keep track of them, plan out your seed trays, take note of, well, a whole bunch of criteria. You can take photos, post them up, share them with other people. So it's kind of the way I describe it. If it's a one-liner, it's a Facebook for gardeners, right?
And there's a big old community there now.
It's massive. Yeah, it keeps growing, and it's people keep finding it. So that's awesome. People that haven't even seen my YouTube channel, they're finding Seedzio. Nice. So that's good. And it's nice to see the work that I've done being appreciated. And there's so much more coming down the line. So many things planned. I've got a mile-long list of features that are coming in, plus a really exciting feature, which some of you may know about, but I won't talk about it too much here, because as soon as I mention it, then everybody messages me and say, can I use it now, please? But yeah, that's coming soon as well, some very cool stuff. But yeah, Seedzio, go check it out, seedzio.com, seedsio.com.
Fabulous. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next question. I don't know if it's Ro or Roy Abbott-Bull asks, my seedlings have sprouted, but they're taking so long to grow despite germination with a heating pad and weekly fertilization. Why are they growing so slowly?
Oh no, Roy.
We had a chat about this, didn't we, earlier? So my chili growing knowledge is very limited, but my initial reaction would be, don't fertilize, too much fertilizer.
You're learning by osmosis.
I am.
So yeah, the one thing that jumped out at me when I read that is the weekly fertilization. Don't feed your seedlings. I made a video literally titled "Don't Feed Your Seedlings." So again, it seems counterintuitive, because you think, well, the more fertilizer I give it, the more it's going to use, and the bigger the plants are going to get. It doesn't work that way.
You get lazy.
So there's a couple of things that happen when you overfeed. Number one is the seedlings. So there's so many steps to this. So the seedlings, they are tiny. The reason we keep potting up to bigger pots is because we want to increase the size of the root system. I don't care about above the soil. That doesn't matter to me. I could have the tiniest plant on top. If the root system is perfect and it's looking lovely and, you know, properly built out and it's spread out to the cell, but the plant on top is tiny, I actually don't care. I mean, yeah, of course, you need the leaves on top because it's photosynthesis, but the root system is what you're aiming for at this stage. Because the bigger the root system, the more nutrients it can actually take in. And that's something you're building up towards later in the season. I only start feeding my plants probably a month into final potting up. So once I put into the final pot size, then I'll start feeding. Because, I mean, listen, this is taking into account how I grow. If you're growing in a different way, if you've started your seeds not in compost like I do, if you've started it in, let's say, you know, coca-coir or, you know, hydroponic sponge or whatever, then of course you need to feed. But if you're starting it using just a plain compost or some sort of feed like that, then don't feed it. Because what's going to happen is if you do keep feeding it and you put it in this nice little compost cell, the roots are going to say, well, we don't need to spread because we constantly get a nice feed of fertilizer on top. So, hey, well, we're just going to keep on getting it. Whereas if you let it, number one, let it dry out, like we talked about earlier, let it dry out a little bit, the roots going to spread to find water. But the roots are also going to spread to find nutrients. Once it's used up all the nutrients in the soil and it started getting a little root bound inside its pot, that's when you know it's time to pot up to the next pot because you're then going to give it a bit more nutrients. And you're going to keep on doing that because you want that root system to keep growing. Because when it gets to the final pot size and you have this massive root ball, that means you can feed the hell out of it. You can water the hell out of it. It's going to take up a lot more nutrients. It's going to take up a lot more water. But if you've got a tiny root ball and you might have a beautiful plant on top, that doesn't matter because the leaves don't absorb nutrients. I mean, you can a little bit from a foliar spray, but that's not where it's going to really get its nutrients. It's going to be from the root system. If you have a root system that fills an entire pot, you can feed that thing and water that thing to your heart's content. But if you do it when it's too young, you're going to stunt its growth a little bit because you could also over-fertilize. If the roots are too small, it's going to be just too much for it to handle. So that would be my first thing. The other thing as well, you didn't mention anything about light. You just mentioned that you have a heat pad, which is great. You need warmth. You need some water. You don't need fertilization, but you do need light. If you are growing it on a windowsill, that's not fantastic, especially here in the UK. We don't get a ton of light at this time of year. And even if you're in a place where you get a lot of sunshine, again, you're on a windowsill, the light can only hit it for a certain part of the day. So you do need light, you know, however that may be. Again, I have articles on this and videos on the whole thing around light and how much light it needs, like the daily light integral, how much light in total it gets, not just the singular lux, you know, that's going to come from a single light bulb. It's about the daily light integral, how much you're going to get throughout the day.
And actually, that was a question from Gordo 2.0. He said, can you get away with not using a grow light and instead just use natural sunlight?
You can. So if I was going to do that, I probably could. Like at the moment, when I went in, I was in the greenhouses today. I was trying to clear out a few things. And it was so beautiful and warm in there. I mean, it was stunning. It was like 35, 40 degrees in there. And you know, we do get a bit of sunshine now. It starts coming in at this time of year. And I think I might be wrong, but I think Gordo is in the UK as well. Yes, you can be in the sunshine. But if I was going to do it, I'd be doing it out in my greenhouse. And I would make sure I have my heating on because the nights still get cold. And
we had a frost last night,
This is it. Yeah, we had a hard frost. And as soon as you do have a hard frost and that hits the roots of your plant's going to die. The chili plants cannot handle that. But if you can maintain a temperature that is decent, and I think there's another question about temperatures for plants. So I'm sure we'll get to that. Yep. But you need to maintain a decent temperature, at least above freezing. But if it's just above freezing, it just means that the plant is going to be alive. It's not going to thrive. So you need a good mix of decent amount of light, decent amount of warmth as well on the soil, and obviously watering correctly. But yeah, you can do it in the sunlight, but on a windowsill, that's going to be difficult. Doable, but difficult. You're not going to necessarily get the harvest or the size plants that you see me growing. If you have a conservatory where you have light pretty much all day, it kind of acts like a greenhouse, and yeah. Conservatories are typically heated. Warmer, so yeah. That'd be a perfect spot as well.
Yeah, the question on temperature is actually from Sam Hudson. So he asks, what is the optimal temperature for young plants after the first potting up?
Oh, so optimal, if you don't care about electricity costs and heating costs and stuff like that, then if you can maintain about 20 degrees, that'd be good. I mean, ideally, you know, if you could maintain like 26, 28 degrees Celsius the whole time, that'd be great too. But you got to think about what's going to happen when you do put it outside, when you do put it inside a greenhouse later on in the season. There's no way you're going to maintain 28 degrees average throughout even the hottest of the months, right? You might get a couple of days where it's like that, but you got to think about that. So you're trying to acclimatize your plants for when they do go outside. So 20 degrees is good. That'll give it a good mix of, hey, we've got some warmth, so we'll keep growing nicely and we'll keep on pushing our roots out and spreading, and the plant will be nice and healthy. But it also is not too hot that when you do stick it outside, it's suddenly like, oh, what's happening here? I was 28 degrees. Now I'm freezing. And, you know, then it starts saying, okay, I'm going to stop growing for a month now. You know, so that's 20 degrees, I would say, is a good number to aim for.
And what heat level are your seedlings at in the potting shed at the moment?
At the moment, 16 to 18 degrees.
Okay. Oh, I don't need to move into there then, just to get some heat, because you're focusing all of our energy.
Well, but the reason it's 16, 18, like I said, I would prefer it to be 20, but I know I would use a lot more fuel because I am using my diesel heater. I would use a lot more fuel. So I'm trying to use 10 liters of fuel per 4 days at most. And that means that it works out a lot cheaper. I have a figure in my mind of 5 pounds a day that we were doing at one point when I was doing electricity. Yeah. And 5 pounds a day for 3 months, that adds up, and that's not great. So I've brought it down now to probably about a pound a day. So I'm happy with that. If it's 30 pounds a month, even if it's 40 pounds a month, like when we have the colder days, because the heat hasn't been on at all today because didn't need to.
Nice and toasty in there.
Yeah, it works well.
Fantastic. So David Cairncross asks, how long should it take from germination to first leaves growing? Mine seem to be taking ages, 2 weeks, I think. Any idea why?
That's not ages. That's about average.
Does it depend on the seeds as well?
It does depend on the variety that you're growing. So once it's germinated, now you've got the cotyledons come through. Make sure you get some light on it. Again, if there's a decent amount of light, then it's going to spark it off to actually start growing out its true leaves. Remember, the plants, they're quite clever and they're quite resilient as well. So if they don't have enough light and they just have their cotyledons come up, the cotyledons are the first leaves that come through. When those show and there's no light on those leaves, then they're going to slow down and say, well, maybe we need to wait a little bit. Maybe we started a bit too soon. As soon as they have a decent amount of light, so, okay, let's start growing. Let's do this. Let's start putting out true leaves. Because once the true leaves are out, that's a whole different story, right? Cotyledons, they can do some photosynthesis, but they're more, in my mind, they're more of like an indicator to the plant to say, okay, let's do our thing. Let's start growing. And once the other true leaves come out, then obviously the rest of the process comes through. So make sure you've got enough light on them. That'll help them out. But 2 weeks isn't too long. You're probably noticing now, since you've asked that question, you're probably noticing the true leaves popping out. You'll see them little shoots coming through in the middle.
So hopefully that answers your question, David. We have – this is actually a really interesting question, and it's one that I was hoping you would have got to during the live stream yesterday.
Which one?
But you ignored my highlighting.
Oh, you're trying to – you see what's going on. You get to see exactly what I'm doing during the live stream. I'm watching three screens. I've got so many applications going on.
I know, I can only prod you so much. So Bram Ockerman asks, how do you measure the pH of your soil and how do you lower it if needed? And I did actually share your PH video with Ram during the live stream, and he said, I've watched this, but of course you're doing it with water. Do you use the same PH meter with your soil? And how do you kind of manipulate the PH levels?
So I don't have to check the soil. If you are using compost, compost is naturally acidic. So compost is at a perfect pH for your plants. What affects the compost and what starts raising the pH is when you start using alkaline water, when you start using it's mainly the alkaline water that comes through, and you know it'll start increasing that pH.
And there are ways of making sure that it's not alkaline, isn't it?
This is why I suggest using rainwater. Yeah. Rainwater is naturally acidic. Again, nature is wonderful. It does it all for you. You know, there's a reason rain is at the pH it's at. There's a reason that compost is at the pH it's at. You know, it all just complements growing. Everything wants to grow, and all these things are working towards helping them grow. It's when we start fiddling with it that it...
Say fiddling, but some people may not have.
Yeah, some people don't have the opportunity. The choice. If you can, try and get rainwater, because typically rainwater is almost at the perfect pH. To drop the pH, you know, I've had so many arguments about this, but the easiest way without having to go out and buy stuff, just use a bit of lemon juice. There's vitamin C in there, which ascorbic acid. I can't remember exactly now. But there are nutrients inside the lemon juice as well that are good for the plants. But at the same time, it is going to drop the pH, and it'll do it quite subtly, right? So it's not going to be too harsh. You can't really overdo it too much. I mean, obviously, don't use a ton of lemon juice. Whereas you can then also go and buy pH down, which is I think it's phosphoric acid. So it's actually the same stuff I think that I use for my sanitizing when I'm making hot sauce. But pH down is so strong. With my big 230 liter barrels, and obviously when you're doing hydroponics, you do need to adjust pH and things like that. That's what pH down is for. But my massive 230 liter barrels, I can drop that pH so quickly, even with like a shot glass full of it. It's so strong. And that means you can also make a bit of a problem for yourself. If you do overdo it, you can really kill your plants or just set them back massively. But the best way to drop it back is just start using rainwater if you can. Try and collect rainwater. I know some states in the US actually don't allow it. It's illegal to collect rainwater. Mm. Never makes sense to me. But yeah, I don't know. Other than that... If you want to directly bring down the pH of the soil, you know, if you are working with soil like we have raised beds, so if I wanted to drop the pH of that, what would I use? Probably fish blood and bone, which would also add nutrients to it. But you can get like most nitrogen. If you get a pure nitrogen amendment, you can add that, and that'll drop the pH as well, so it can mix into the soil. But if you are going to that level, if you are trying to amend your actual soil in the ground, then I think it's best to probably get some proper testing done and get some proper advice from those people that you're testing with. I can only talk, you know, with my experiences all around pots, right? That's because I can control that entire process. I know what I'm putting in the beginning. My soil mix is built in a way so that it makes sure that not only the pH is correct, and it's also going to buffer it. So even if you do have a neutral pH water from your taps, if you are using tap water, that the soil mix will actually buffer it and it will allow it to be at the right levels. Plus, obviously, the nutrients in that down the line, especially things like calcium, magnesium, those are massive things that your plant gets deficient in later on in the season. And you can't really amend the soil late in the season, so you need to do it in the beginning. So check out my soil mix video. That'll hopefully help you out if you are growing in pots. If you're growing in soil, like I said, get it properly tested and hopefully get advice from the people that you test with.
I'm going to stick with soil because there's another question here about whether you can use soil from previous years used for chilies and tomatoes. Can you reuse that soil for growing chilies? And that's a question from Booyah. 253
So that's similar to another question I get, which is what I do with all my soil at the end of the season.
Well, we've been talking about what you're going to do with all of yours as well. So
I do it in 3-year cycles. So first year, I use fresh soil. Second year, I will reuse that soil, but I'll mix it half-half with fresh soil. So the way I'll do it in that instance, I will consider it part of the compost. I won't consider all the other stuff that's in it because there's perlite and vermiculite in there as well. And there might be some elements of nutrients that I've added, like fish blood and bone and the Epsom salts and things like that, but most of that's gone. But I mix that in because it's more about the texture of it. So it hasn't broken down enough. It's still humus, I think they call it, but it's humus. So basically it's light and it's not bogged down. It's not compressed or anything like that. So you can mix that in with your other mix. So I'll add that in as if it's compost and I'll do my normal soil mix and I'll use it that second year. Then the third year, I'll bin that all out and that'll go into the raised beds like this year will be raised beds.
Vegetables.
For the vegetables. Which again, I'll probably amend it with a little bit more compost and just mix it in. But that's essentially it. So this year I'm using fresh soil. I'm starting off with fresh compost again.
Already had that delivered.
Yeah. Well, and all the stuff that I've made. So we've got plenty available there. It's going to be fresh soil this year, fresh compost. And then we'll go through the cycle again. Next year it'll be half down and that sort of stuff. But yeah, you can use it. Just what I would say is if you are going to reuse soil, if you've seen any problems with your plants that are like any bugs in the plants or if you've got ants, we had ants the 1 year.
Yeah, especially in the raised beds.
Don't reuse that. If there's any sickly plants that started getting a bit of disease later on in the season, do not use that soil again. Rather bin that, throw it away, start fresh. But if it's from a healthy plant, then there's no reason not to reuse it.
Okay, so going back to the very early part of the season, Crystal Curry Schaefer asks, what are your thoughts on cold stratification of seeds? Did I say that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Stratification.
What I think she's asking, and it's something
Like I've written an article on it recently as well. Yeah.
So I think what you're talking about is tricking the seed into thinking it's gone through a cold spell. So if especially if I'm using fresh seeds that I've just got, just harvested and just dried, like within days, then putting them in the fridge for a little while, like for overnight or a couple of days, and then using them, I get far quicker germination than I would if I just try to plant them straight away. You're kind of making the seed think it's gone through a cold season, right?
Winter.
Yeah. So I do find that helps. But, you know, generally I like to store my seeds in the fridge anyway if I'm drying them correctly, which I am. So any seed you buy from me, you can put those in the fridge. You can actually put them in the freezer if you want. But yeah, fridge is perfectly fine. That'll keep them fresh. But also it helps that when you take them out the fridge and then you go and you start soaking them, don't soak them too long. Again, we'll talk about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, another question you get asked a lot. So
yeah, and I've had to deal with a couple emails today about this. So yeah, just soak them a little bit and then plant them. Or don't soak them. They're fresh seeds. But if you put them in then warm soil and you start the whole germination process, it's going to just germinate probably a day or two quicker. And you'll get a far more vigorous start. That's at least what I find.
So is it worth talking about the scarification?
No, so that's scarification. The scarification is the soaking. That's what the soaking is. So I have made a video on this. I've talked about soaking. I created a nice graph, which I thought, you know, instead of me just talking and showing it up on the screen, that it would make sense to people. But I think some people might have missed it a little bit. And they end up thinking, well, if I soak it for longer, that'll be better. That's not the case. If you're soaking fresh seeds, the thing is the shell is not as hard and rugged as it would be if it was an older seed. If it's a five-year-old seed, though, that shell needs quite a bit more work to break down and then allow the energy of the seed that's inside it to actually escape and do its thing and germinate. When you soak your fresh seeds too long, the liquid can get inside the shell a lot quicker than it would with older seeds. And when it gets inside the shell, those seeds actually need to breathe. They need oxygen. Mm. But if now you're soaking it for 24 hours, which this is the email that I got the other day, and the guy unfortunately had some bad germination with my seeds, it's because he had been soaking them for so long. And typically that wouldn't be a problem if you're soaking them in fairly cold liquid. But if you're soaking them like he was in 30 degrees Celsius liquid, which is fine for doing it in an hour, but he was doing it for 24 hours, what happens there is you're going to potentially drown your seed. Mm. So you don't want to do that. 24 hours is fine if you are putting in cold. So like I think some of my patrons have asked, you know, is there any problem? I have just soaked my seeds by mistake for 24 hours. I'm like, you should be all right, because most of the time they like in a climate like ours, yeah, and they're soaking it. Like if I soak out in the germinator, I know it's cold in there, so yeah, it's not too much of a problem. But yeah, don't soak for too long. And soaking does help. For fresh seeds, you might not see as much of a benefit as others, but even if it's a day sooner that is going to germinate by soaking, to me that's worth it because it just keeps me going a bit quicker. So.
Well, I know you enjoy seeing those little seedlings sprout. So.
The little loops that pop up, it's got to be the best.
Okay, so we were chatting yesterday about the your competition for the Dorset Naga, which you've done for the last couple of seasons, haven't you?
So not the competition, that was Big and Tall. So the Dorset Naga, that's opening up. So the last 2 years I've grown a monster Dorset Naga.
Dorset Naga challenge yeah, competition, can't keep up.
Yeah, so last year Pepper Geek and I did a bit of a grow off because the year before I had grown this monster chili plant that was huge, like 7 foot high.
You're experimenting.
It was massive. And I was experimenting with different pot sizes. I ended up, the massive plant was a 160 liter pot, but actually I ended up realizing that 160 liter pot, that's great, but the season's not long enough for it to actually be put to full use. So I probably had fewer pods on it than I would have if I had focused my energy on a 90-liter pot. 90-liter pot, I think, would have been the sweet spot with how I was doing it that year. But anyway, the following year, I did a challenge with Pepper Geek, which I won. Not rubbing that in or anything. But yeah, so we did that challenge. And during that year, so many people were wanting to be involved themselves, and they were sending me photos of their own monster Dorset Nagas, and it was great. And I decided, well, instead of challenging someone, let's challenge everyone. Let's all get involved.
Get everybody involved.
So if you do want to get involved, I mean, there's a couple of ways of doing it. Just start growing your Dorset Naga. Hopefully you already started growing it. But on social media, like Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, or even YouTube, just use the hashtag CC Dorset Naga and or CC Monster Chili. And just use those hashtags, and then I'll normally get visibility of it, and other people will be able to search it up and get visibility of it as well. And don't forget to at me as well, so at Chili Chump on whatever social media and that. Because, again, I do love looking at those things. I love seeing what you guys are doing. We'll see. There's going to be some monsters, I'm sure, this year.
Yeah.
And the other way to do this as well, so not only on the social media, but if you know what Discord is, or even if you don't, maybe go check it out. We have a public Discord channel, and I've just set up a public Discord server where there's some channels that are open to everybody and some channels that are closed off for patrons and paying YouTube members and things like that. But I have just created a channel today. I don't know if you saw that.
I haven't, not yet.
Yeah. So just before the podcast, I created a channel for the monster chili plant, so the monster Dorset Naga. So you can go in there and people are sharing their photos and talking about what's going on. I think Mr. T has been all over that with his plants.
Yeah, it looks like he's having some good success.
Yeah, he's got some big old plants actually. So I'm a bit worried for my monster this year. No, I've got off to a good start. We'll see how it goes there.
So one of the questions that we had in was from DM, which will grow bigger from your experience, 7-pot Primo versus Dorset Naga?
At the moment, Dorset Naga. So you got to think again what I was talking about earlier with selective breeding. like the Sisi peri peri.
Mm.
That's traditionally an African chili. It's an African bird's eye. And that's where it's going to thrive. We do not live in a climate that's anything like Africa, unfortunately. So the Sisi peri peri, I've had improved yields every year that I've grown it. I've had improved germination. I've had improved yields. I've improved plant size, health, and all that sort of thing because I am acclimatizing it to this environment, which is very similar to what's happened with the Dorset Naga in this country. The Dorset Naga was actually the Naga Morik. And I think it was, what's the... top of my head.
Sea spring seeds.
Yeah, sea spring seeds, they started isolating, similar to what I did with the Sisi peri peri. So the Dorset Naga is actually a Naga Morik. And they just isolated it for this climate. And they ended up with this plant that it's a super hot that grows really well in colder climates. And, you know, that's meaning that that's why it's a good plant to grow for monster plants. Because even if you're not in a climate like ours, if you are in a nicer climate, then it's going to grow massively, right? But with the Simpot Primo, it will get there. So that's what I'm saying. That's, you know, I'm isolating. I'm actually growing on behalf of Troy Primo. Troy has provided me the seeds and I'm isolating this variety here in the UK. So we'll see. I'll have a chat to Troy if we actually give it a bracket CC or something at the end just to show that it is one that has been cultivated for a colder climate. So chili chomp cold climate. CC. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But I am going to be isolating that. Like the ones that I'm growing this year are going to be even better than the ones I grew last year. And I'm going to keep on doing this. And we're going to end up having healthier and better seeds as we go along. Because where he grows them, he's got a beautiful climate. Mm. And it's very different to what we have here.
Very jealous. Maybe we can go visit.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a second as well. But I think the Simpot Primo can get to monster sizes. The one I grew in the hydroponics this year, I got it pretty massive, but it was nowhere near what my Dorset Naga did.
Mm.
The Dorset Naga, it was way more fulled out, bigger leaves and all that sort of thing. It just grew a lot healthier and a lot bigger than the Primo. But we'll get there. I'd like to switch out from the Dorset Naga to the Simpot Primo for these monster competitions at some stage once I'm happy with the progress of it.
Interesting.
So we'll see how that goes.
We've got a couple of questions on crossing chilies.
Oh boy.
Did you talk about that in the live stream yesterday?
I did talk about it a little bit. I talked about the lemon peri that I've been growing. So.
Oh, you did? Yes.
Yes.
So Leon Grise asks, how about crossing other chilies with capsicum
flexuosum?
Thanks. Hold resistant to get a pepper which survives winters. So does that follow on from what you were just talking about?
And that's great. I mean, and that's what you're going to come up against a bit of a barrier here when we start talking about this. You know, when people
my lack of knowledge.
Not you. Not your barrier. No, but this is what happens. It's the excitement. When I first started looking into crossing and I started looking into the genetics and that sort of thing, I got super excited. I'm like, this is awesome, you know, to do exactly what he's saying, like get a cold resistant and, you know, like we're saying here with, selective breeding and things like that to try and get it to grow well in a colder climate or a shorter season. That's what you're trying to do. But what he's saying is jump that, right? We already have this species of chili, the flexuosum, which can do well in the cold climate. Let's go and cross that with something like a capsicum annuum. The problem is...
That I've heard of. Yeah. The other one I haven't.
Yeah, so that's not one of the five common ones, in case people that are listening aren't aware. You know, the most common are the capsicum annuum, which are things like the jalapeno and bell peppers and, you know, things like that, cayenne.
My level, yeah.
Yeah. Then the other one that my favorite is the Sisi peri peri, which is part of the capsicum frutescens, right? Which a lot of people, there's quite a few people out there that think they're just the same, annuum and frutescens, but I don't think they are. I think there's a little bit of difference. Then you have the capsicum chinens, which is all the super hots. And the hots are things like habanero, scotch bonnets, the Simpot Primo, Carolina Reaper, and all that sort of thing. That's capsicum chinens. Then you get the capsicum bactum, mm-hmm. and then the capsicum pubescens. So those are the five main species. Flexuosum is not so common.
Learning stuff today.
Yeah. Now, the problem is some species don't cross very easily. They can cross. Like my lemon peri, that's a bactum crossed with a frutescens.
Mm.
That's not an ideal cross. It makes it quite challenging, which is, has been challenging for me. But I am persevering, and I'm at F4, F5 now. And that means that, again, I'm getting stronger and stronger seeds. I'm getting to a point that it is going to germinate a lot more readily than it has been. Mm. It's going to be a lot healthier. It's going to produce more pods and that sort of thing. Because I love the output of this plant. It just doesn't put out a lot of pods,
yeah.
and it doesn't germinate very well. So similar thing with flexuosum. There's not a lot. I'd have to bring up the chart, but what you'd need to look at is whether that can readily cross with other varieties. But yes, if it could, that'd be a great idea. But I seem to remember that that one doesn't really cross too readily with some of the others that you might be thinking of.
Interesting. Okay, challenging me again on the names here, but we'll stick with that topic. And we had a question from Kubayib. I apologize again if I've really butchered
the pronunciation. I just love that it's not me messing it up today. That's great.
They ask, any tips for growing capsicum chinens outdoors in the UK? My only successful varieties have been Numex Suave and Chocolate Habanero.
Oh, I wish it was easy. Because I'd love to. I mean, we got a nice bit of land here to be able to dedicate an entire, which we did the first year we're here, dedicate an entire raised bed to chilies growing outdoors. That would be awesome. Unfortunately, this weather, from a number of reasons, it doesn't do well. The first thing you need to do, if you get a soil thermometer and you go and stick that in the ground, even in June, July, as much as it's lovely, we're all in shorts and flip-flops and enjoying the beautiful sunshine, and the top of the soil might feel great. Mm. You go stick that soil probe down and you'll notice, wait, the soil is still very, very cold, which means, unfortunately, the roots are just not going to spread. It's not going to go down to where the cold is. When you get towards August, September, then the soil has warmed up quite a bit. But at that point, you'd expect to have a massive plant. My plants are nearly full grown by August.
Yeah.
So it will really set you back. So if you do want to grow capsicum chinens outdoors, unfortunately, you're going to have to first do it indoors. And that kind of defeats the point, I guess, of what you're trying to do. But get it to a mature state so that when you do go stick it outside, that it's going to be far more established. So instead of, like, I'm going to take my plants out into the final potting, well, actually before final potting, I'll take it out there beginning of April. Whereas if you're going to be doing this, if you want to try and optimize the growth, I'd probably be doing it end of June. But then you have other challenges. By that point, you're probably going to have a ton of aphids if you're growing indoors, because the heat level and those plants being inside, it's not easy. The other way you can do it is not necessarily what you're asking, because you're asking about growing them outdoors. So I'm guessing then you're meaning that you don't want to use things like polytunnels or greenhouses, but you can create like a mini polytunnel type thing, just a makeshift something, because the other problem you have is overwatering, which we've talked about earlier. Mm. Overwatering is still a problem later on when you have, you know, mature plants. What you can do is create some sort of a cover over it. So even if you aren't completely sealing it in like you would with a polytunnel or a greenhouse, at least have something covered over so that you are limiting the amount of water that gets to those plants. That'll also help it out. But you're still going to have a problem with the cold. So it's a bit challenging. The best way to do it is, and you could do this really cheaply, as a makeshift polytunnel, like just a mini polytunnel over your plants. That'll help it out a ton. Even those cheapy ones you get on Amazon, like $20, $30, I've seen people have great success. Oh, I did. I mean, when I first started out, I was using a real cheapy little thing, but made a hell of a difference.
So that won't necessarily heat up the soil but it'll heat up.
It'll help the soil, especially if you, so if you are going to do that, I would also raise the soil. That's why you have raised beds. Okay. Part of the reason for raised beds is to increase the heat of the soil.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So you'd raise the soil if you can. It will help warm the soil a little bit, not as much as it would if it was, you know, raised in a pot in outdoors, but you can do that as well. You know, I did that in my polytunnel that I had in the place in Bedfordshire where I had pots. So we had the polytunnel set up and I had pots sitting on top of the soil or just partially submerged in the soil. Yeah, so it was raised quite a bit more and that kept the soil lovely and warm. And we, I mean, I couldn't even walk inside that polytunnel at the end of the season. It was a jungle.
Yeah. Crazy. I don't like going in at that time of year because of the spiders. Okay. So one of the questions that we had was from Ben Miles on what is the pot size progression that you generally use for potting up from seed tray to final pot? And again, we've spoken about this a lot and making sure that you're doing it in stages, haven't we? So I know you've got so many different pot sizes.
This year for especially.
Your, yeah.
My final pot size, because normally my final pot sizes are 10 liters or 12.5. That's what I've normally gone with. Sometimes I've included 7.5 for some plants. This year I've got 3-liter pots, I've got 5-liter pots, 7.5, 10s and 12.5s. So
potting up's going to be fun this year, isn't it?
Okay. So again, have a look. I have got videos on potting up and I talk about why we do it and then it might help you understand what I'm about to say a little bit better. But if I had all the time in the world, which I don't, but if I had all the time in the world, I would be potting up to double the pot size
each time
until I get to my final pot size. So, for example, today I potted up to 500 milliliter pots or half liter pots. My next pot should be a 1 liter pot.
Yeah.
Then a 2 liter pot, then a 4 liter, then an 8 liter. I do not have time to do that, but that is, that would be the ideal situation. But I'm not doing that with 800 plants. No chance.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it a little bit more, you know, a little bit fewer pots. But if you do have the time, if you are growing just 20 or 10 plants, then definitely pot it up more often. You'll thank me at the end of the season. I can tell you that much. It might feel like a bit of a pain to do it at the time. And it might seem like, well, what's the point of that? Surely I'm stunting growth. No, you're not. You are doing just the right thing. And your plant will, it'll be huge. And by the end of the season, you're going to have far bigger harvest. So you can test it yourself. Pot up one of your plants like just once. Go pot it up once from seedling right to the full pot size. And then another plant, go and pot up multiple pots and you'll see there'll be a massive, massive difference. But to answer your question, let's say I was going for a 10-liter pot in a typical year, I would go my seed tray. I would then go from the seed tray to probably the 1-liter pot. That's what I did last year. This year I'm doing 500 mils because I have so many more plants. I don't have space
for them. At the moment.
So I went from the seedling, the seed tray to the 1-liter pot, then to 5-liter, and then to final 10. Some of them I even skipped the 5-liter pot. So, but it's not ideal.
No.
The plants that I was really excited for and that I really wanted to make sure had the best yields, those ones I potted up more than the other ones, which I wasn't like too fussed with how many pods I got. I just wanted some pods. So hopefully that answers your question.
Awesome. And Mark Poole asks, any recommendations on which compost to buy given the prevalence of peat-free compost?
Peat-free and peat, I know that there's a new law. Basically, there's a new law that's come in that you can't sell compost now with peat. I think it's come in this year. It shouldn't matter. You know, if all you were going to be doing is buying a bag of compost and putting it into a pot and growing your chili, that's one thing. But there's a reason I do my amendments. Whether I had peat-free compost or compost with peat in or whatever, I mean, to be honest, I don't really like using peat anyway.
And well, you've done some experiments.
I did an experiment last year and it holds onto the water way too much and that's not good for the roots. But if you are following my soil recipe, then it shouldn't really matter. Buy the cheapest compost you can. preferably make your own. But if you are going to buy it, if you're in the UK, some of the local councils will allow you to buy compost in bulk from them, or even get it for free from them, because all the food scraps and that you're sending off each week, they're getting composted. So some of the councils will actually allow it. Unfortunately, our council doesn't, so I have to buy some in if I have to supplement my own stuff. Otherwise, buy the cheapest compost you can. Look that it doesn't have any amendments in it. It's not enriched with anything. They haven't gotten added like slow release pellets and stuff like that. You do not want that in there. You also do not want any water retaining gel or beads or anything like that, which is in a lot of the compost.
Huge amount of hanging baskets using those things.
But they sell compost now with those little beads in it. Because they're helping with water retention, because majority of plants love water retention and most people are too lazy to water properly. So it really helps out. With chilies, you need it to dry out in between. So, yeah, get the cheapest compost you can. Obviously, if you can, look at the compost. Just make sure that you're looking at it. It's not like a mix of sand in there or anything. You do not want sand in your compost. You do not want anything other than organic material inside there. So, yeah, don't have to spend a lot of money on this stuff. Preferably don't spend a lot of money. That means you're getting something that is just pure compost.
Hopefully that answered your question there, Mark. We've got a couple that are a bit left field.
Yeah.
Not left field, but we haven't really chatted much.
We need
about
a couple left field before we before we close off, because I'm getting hungry and I heard the timer go off on my chicken.
So Flying Shoe asks, have you had any luck with germinating seeds from frozen peppers?
No.
I've never seen you attempt it.
No, I have. Well, I've tested it. Yeah. I've tested it way back. I mean, geez.
I mean, we've got frozen peppers galore in our freezer.
But it won't work. So the problem is, the reason I said earlier that you can freeze my seeds that you buy from me from my store, chilichumpseeds.com, or put them in the fridge, is because I dry them adequately. If the seeds are still have some moisture in them, then what happens when you freeze it, that moisture is going to expand the seed. You'll actually probably crack it. You'll kill it. So most of the time it won't work well, especially flash frozen. So a lot of stuff is flash frozen if you haven't frozen it yourself. If you have frozen it yourself, again, you know, depending on how cold it's getting, you know, the likelihood is you're going to be freezing fresh chilies. And that means those seeds are still nice and plump and juicy, which means, like the roots, if the roots freeze of a chili plant, it will die. Same thing with the seeds. So you can test it out. You might get lucky, but I'd say 99 times out of 100, you will not have any luck whatsoever. Dried seeds, on the other hand, you can get lucky with that sometimes. Sometimes you'll see it's interesting. I've tried it a couple of times where you have a spice mix and you can see there's a couple seeds that are intact, and try and grow them out. It actually works. And fascinating one as well is seeds that I've seen inside hot sauce before, especially fermented hot sauce. So a question I got quite a few times, I've seen photos of this. People are asking why these little white things that are like look like little worms inside their hot sauce.
Yeah.
And what that is the seeds have germinated inside their hot sauce, and the little shoot, the little sprout has come off inside the hot sauce. Wow. So, yeah, sometimes you get lucky and you can actually get seeds for some of the from these hot sauces.
Interesting. And then one of my favorites. So one of the challenges that you always have whenever we overwinter any of your chilies are pests. And Pals Ilimar asks, any idea how to get rid of the little flies in the pots?
Well, any insects, the best thing is other insects.
Oh, you posted a brilliant photo actually of a ladybug.
I was so chuffed. It was a ladybug. So I'm hoping I'm going to get tons of them. Every time I find a ladybug outside, I go and bring them inside my germination shed because I did have some aphids in there. So aphids are the worst thing. Aphids or white fly, especially in our region, that's what we get a lot of. And it's such a pain. They can really do some damage to your plants, especially young plants. The best way to get rid of them is with predator insects, which ladybugs are beautiful and they do a great job. They're ferocious little things, but even better than that is hoverflies. And we're lucky we get quite a few hoverflies here, but I also try and attract them by, we have a patch of land that we've left to grow wild so that it does attract insects and things like that. So that helps out.
Have you been raiding them?
Yeah. But the other thing to do as well is to get companion plants like marigolds. So French marigolds are perfect for attracting hoverflies. I grow, you'll always see that.
The ones in the polytunnel got massive last year.
Yeah, but they look out of place. It's like, why am I growing flowers inside my greenhouse and stuff? That's why. I grow a few of them every year, and they do such a good job with attracting predator insects. French marigolds, specifically for hoverflies, they do a fantastic job. So I actually need to start them very soon. But that's the best way. Other than that, if you're not going to be able to put other insects inside with your existing insects, there is the neem oil mix that I talk about. Did you post that link yesterday?
I didn't, not the neem oil link.
But that's also part of my beginner's guide to growing chilies, how to get rid of pests. And that's another video I will be revamping and making it better. But it still works today. Just use some neem oil. It's about a teaspoon of neem oil with about 5 liters of water. I think it's a teaspoon or tablespoon of neem oil and a teaspoon of dishwashing liquid. So just, you know, normal fairy liquid or whatever
it is. Sounds like a homemade cleaning concoction.
Yeah.
I normally use.
Well, it works. I mean, that's what I use inside when we've had that problem inside.
Don't use neem oil to clean.
No, you don't want to use that to clean. And it stinks. It smells. To me, I mean, other people say it smells like other things. It smells to me like rotten peanuts. It's not nice.
I can't say I've rotten peanuts. It's not great. It just is very sticky as well.
But yeah, well, the stickiness is actually from the aphids pulling out the sap and stuff. But yeah, use that mix. What it does is it won't kill those insects, but any insects, so if you spray it on your leaves, what happens is the insects that are feeding on your leaves, which is causing the problem, those insects, they're going to be eating some of the neem oil. And what that does is it won't kill them, but it'll sterilize them. So basically, it'll stop them from being able to have more little pests. So they won't be able to make babies, basically. The good thing is it doesn't affect predators. It doesn't affect the good insects because hoverflies and ladybugs don't eat the leaves. So therefore, they're not going to have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. I know they eat the aphids, but yeah.
Okay, so the one last question that I'm going to go to is Vibes of Essence, who said that they've just trimmed their overwintered peppers today. Is it too early? I'm guessing that depends on where they are.
Yeah, it does. Does depend on where you are. So trimmed. Just wondering, why are you trimming your overwintered peppers? So, okay, the way I suggest overwintering, because obviously a bit late now here in the UK, but if you are in the Southern Hemisphere, if you're in South Africa or Australia or New Zealand, when you finish up your season and you do want to overwinter, you'll take that plant, trim it way back, but you do it at that point before you start your overwintering. Okay. You shouldn't need to be doing that at the start of the season. You can, but effectively you want to make it dormant. So you trim it way back and you clean out the roots. You try and trim the roots back a little bit, put inside a smaller pot, and then you overwinter like that. That's how you would overwinter. And then you'd leave it in a dormant state. You know, so not too much heat and not too much light, just enough light that it keeps it alive and enough heat so that the roots don't freeze, and don't overwater it. But when you get to like this time of year, this is when it starts coming back again. So I haven't overwintered. My lemon peri is overwintered.
Yeah.
And that's coming back with a vengeance. I won't trim it. You know, the leaves that I've started coming through now, those will fall off naturally because at this point they're going to grow for the type of light and heat that it has right now. They'll develop new leaves when the sunshine gets a bit harsher, and you're going to have more tightly compacted leaves that are going to be better for that sunshine. So I wouldn't really trim back, but I don't understand why you're trimming back at this point. Anyway, I mean, if you want to send me a message, chilichump.com/contact, and let me know exactly what you're doing there. I'll be able to give you more advice on that.
And just one final shout out just for Martin Rides. He asked, any advice for an amateur about levels of watering seedlings, Hopefully we've already answered that for you. And thanks to everybody else that asked questions yesterday. As we said at the start, if we haven't covered it in this, then expect a follow-up podcast, certainly one that talks about chilies and hot sauces.
Yeah, and leave comments down below or get in contact. Actually, I have a phone number as well that you can leave a WhatsApp message. We'll leave that number down below in the show notes or the description. So you can leave a voice note, because it's always nice to have a bit of interaction like that. So it's not just you and me. So yeah, I'll leave that down below as well. If you do have any questions about growing, and you know, obviously we just covered off the growing side of things today, and I'm sure we'll have a ton more questions on the next live stream with growing and that.
Absolutely.
But obviously there's other areas that we're covering off as well, but we'll focus next time, I think, on some of the other stuff, maybe on what we do with the chilies after they have grown. So things like checking out our chilies. So I have a nice series on that we check out our various chilies that we have, and I talk about all the different things about it, how they taste. I even taste them on camera. Some of the hot ones are a pain, but I do it. And then we'll talk about sauces and recipes and things like that as well. And if we want, we could do an automation one.
There's tons of
topics. Yeah. So people need to let us know, and yeah, send us questions. Send us voice notes as well. Even if you just have a comment about the show, if there's something you want us to do, something.
And you're live on.
I shouldn't say what you want us to do. What you want us to talk about, what you don't want us to talk about, what you enjoy about the show so far, you know, what you want to see, just let us know. We love the feedback. Do you have anything else to say before we head off and have some food and spend time with our Barney, who's been really quiet?
He's obviously gone to sleep by now, but we definitely owe him some playtime.
You don't think he's upstairs? No, he wouldn't have done that if we're in here. No, nothing else.
No, let's go.
Awesome. We'll go eat now. Thank you guys so much for listening in, and we'll see you again very soon. Well, there'll be some videos before the next podcast, but there will be more frequent podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and yeah, we'll see you the next time.
Stay spicy.
Stay spicy.